This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Tyne.
And I'm Bonnie North. Community leaders around Wisconsin are paying tribute to Vel Phillips. The Milwaukee civil rights pioneer died this week at the age of 94. Phillips was the first African-American and the first woman to serve on Milwaukee's Common Council.
Phillips' tenure on the council and in public life is perhaps most remembered for her tenacious work to end housing discrimination. She introduced legislation repeatedly over the span of 7 years, but Phillips went on to hold other distinctions, such as being the first woman judge in Milwaukee County and the first African-American elected to statewide office in Wisconsin, winning the race for Secretary of State.
Vel Phillips spoke with WUWM's Dave Edwards in 2002 when this show was known as At 10. Here is some of that interview.
You became involved in politics, seeking a seat in the city council, another first for you. What made you think that you could be on the city council?
I don't think anything about what I've done was really remarkable because I never planned anything. It just happened. I just happened to be in the right spot at the right time. I think that was mostly it. And I think the other thing was that because I had good, wonderful parents who made us believe that we could be anything we wanted to be, just like Martin Luther King used to say, everyone can be whatever they want to be. At least he used to say that to me. I just think that it just happened that way. If you really put your heart into it and decide this is what you want, you're always amazed, really amazed at what you can do.
But this was in an era where there was a lot of racism in our community.
Oh, there was racism. There was racism like you would not believe. And every time I got a bump, it would be like a boost. Now, when I first introduced that open housing ordinance, I was turned down smack. Just the vote was always, it went for about 7 years. When there were 19 members on the council, then it would be 18 to 1. When there were 18 members on the council, there would be 17 to 1.
Why was that issue so important to you?
Because when my husband got out of law school, I was still in law school. I had a year to go, and we had no money at all. Then when I got out, we wanted to buy to rent a house in a nice area. And I was told point blank, without a doubt. I had known because my parents had always been very protective of us. And my mother and father were not rich, but they had enough money that they could live in a pretty substantial area. But I had no idea of what they went through. So when it was time for me to rent or buy in a nice area, I was just told, oh, we don't sell to, you know, Negroes. I think that was the term used at that time. And that just, it just dumbfounded me. As a matter of fact, I remember once I would call a real estate. If I saw in the paper my husband and I would scout around and I saw a house, I called the real estate person. I didn't want to give them my telephone number because it was like a Locust or a Concord, which is now 264, I think, or a Locust, which is now 562, or anything like that. They would say, I'm sorry. They'd either hang up the phone or say they wouldn't sell. Mm-hmm. And that just, and when I went door to door for reapportionment as a member of the League of Women Voters, as a fresh out of law school, and saw the way the blacks in that area had to live, you know, I was just a volunteer person for League of Women Voters. I did it because I thought my husband could run for alderman. They were going to maybe reapportion. And when the reapportionment bill passed, and there had to be forced reapportionment, then that area that was created, the old second ward, there was no alderman, no member of the county board, no member of the state assembly. And so my husband had promised that he would run, but he wasn't really interested. And so when I would say, well, honey, you promised, he said, well, why don't you do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it just didn't dawn on me. But I tell you, I said, well, I don't know. I don't think a woman has ever, maybe. So I asked Doyle Getter, who was a Milwaukee Journal reporter, to check to see if a woman had ever been on the city council. And he checked, and he said, no woman has ever even survived a primary, and no black has ever served on the city council. He said, Bill, you don't want to do that, do you? you're not really serious. And I said, well, why shouldn't I be? He said, because you just don't look like a politician. You're very delicate and feminine, and you wouldn't want to be in a smoke-filled room, would you? I said, well, I don't know. I said, do you have to be in a smoke-filled room? He said, well, not really, but, and I checked, and I said to my husband, Doyle Getter doesn't think it's a good idea, and I still think you should do it. He said, well, Doyle Getter doesn't know. You've got the same credentials I have, and you should do it, because I just want to be a lawyer.
This was a very tumultuous time for the city council, not only because of the ordinance, the open housing ordinance, but just in general, I would imagine it would have to be very difficult for you breaking into the old boys club.
Oh, it was.
How did they treat you?
They treated me not very, they didn't want me to use the bathroom, as a matter of fact. You know that, unfortunately, got a lot of publicity, and it was very embarrassing for a woman, especially brought up the way I was brought up. It was very embarrassing to see my name right on the paper, in the newspaper, that I was using the alderman's bathroom, but I wasn't alderman. You know, it just, once you're thrown into that situation, Dave, it just, I don't know, if you have some potential to be a leader and you have some belief really in your cause and in your principles, you just dig your feet in, a little, or your heels in, a little firmer.
And you must have been watching what was going on in other parts of the country. Certainly Dr. King
was a personal friend, by the way.
And so you saw what was going on around the country, and I'm sure you had to relate that to what you were experiencing in Milwaukee.
Yes. And that just gives you all the more. Dick Gregory, for example, joined our marches, and all the nuns and sisters in various churches, it just sort of caught on, you know. Mm-hmm. And the more it caught on, it really takes on a life of its own.
We've been talking about your experiences, personal and political, but you were also very active in the 60s on the city council at a time when this city and many cities around the country endured some very difficult times with civil disturbances. Now, I know you were at the heart of that as well, were you not?
I was. I was elected in 1956 by 100 votes exactly. Actually, that was another experience of real, real deep racism, because when I won the primary, first of all, I'll never forget, when we picked names, there were 8 people running, and I was number 8, and I came home. And I said to my husband, I just was ready to sink in tears. He said, what happened? I said, there are 8 people will be on the ballot, and I'm number 8. And he said, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. And I was ready to cry. And he said, well, listen, we'll just tell everyone the last name on your ballot. We'll just adopt the last shall be first. And all he thought about 5 or 6 different ways we could take advantage of it. When the primary was over, sure enough, there were 2, Leroy Simstars running. I think he was first on the ballot. And he was a black person who had been in the state representative's office. He had been in the state assembly and had gotten defeated. And he was sort of lazy and sort of laid back, but mostly lazy. I hate to say that, but it was true. And he had not won. I think he won 2 or 3 terms. And black people absolutely adored him. If they went to the polls and they didn't even know who was running for president, they were voting for Leroy Simmons. So Leroy Simmons really didn't count me as a threat. And here we were, these 2 names, and the Milwaukee Journal ran a story saying, for the first time in the history of Milwaukee, there will be a Negro on the city council, because both of the people who have survived the primary are Negroes. And he said it would be even more historic because there is a possibility that there will be a woman on the council. Now, this was 56. Milwaukee was incorporated as a city in 1846. So it took 110 years for them to get, first of all, a black person, and second one, a woman. But in any event, when it was learned that these 2 Negroes, quote unquote, were running, a fellow by the name of Julian Nagel decided that this is terrible. We cannot have a black on the city council of Milwaukee. And he ran on a definitely race issue. And what was really hurtful is he ran as a write-in candidate. And everyone said to me, don't worry about a write-in candidate. They go nowhere. Well, he did. I beat Leroy by 500 votes. I beat Julian Nagel by approximately 100 votes. Because he got more votes strictly on the basis of race than Leroy, which tells you how race entered into the whole thing. Now, some people didn't know that I was a woman. Some people didn't know that I was black, and I think I got votes on that account. But race was a big issue.
And when you think about it, if you can kind of, you know, dial history back, I mean, I remember growing up and, you know, at the time when other cities were...
What part of Milwaukee did you...
I grew up on the south side of Milwaukee. But I remember growing up at that time and living through the civil disturbances mm-hmm. of the city when, you know, the battlefield was the 16th Street Viaduct.
That's right.
In many respects.
That's right. We marched over that 16th Street Viaduct many times.
And of course, and you referenced him in one of our earlier segments, a white male priest, Father James Grappi, played an instrumental role
right.
in dealing with the problems
right.
that the black community
right.
were facing.
And Lloyd Barbee, who at that time was serving in the state assembly, used to just get to me and he'd say, Bill, why are you letting Grappi get all of the credit? You're the one that thought of this whole thing. And I said to him, well, first of all, I did love Father Grappi. The thing was, I don't know, the press saw him as like a Father Flanagan kind of guy. You know, he had all these ghetto kids, black kids, in his commando group. And here he was leading them. And it was just too much like a movie. So they come running up to him saying, when is the next ordinance going to be introduced? And he'd say, I don't know. I have no idea. You have to ask Val Phillips. She's running this show. I'm just here to help.
But as this played out, were you surprised that it resulted in civil disturbance?
Oh, I was. I was definitely surprised. I had no idea that there was that much tension. We'd go over that bridge, and things would be thrown on us, urine, rotten eggs. But that's how mean people were. Mm-hmm. That's how much hatred there was in the city of Milwaukee.
You ended up being arrested yourself.
I was arrested, put in jail. I wish that I could have stayed a little longer to really get the feel of it. I did notice, however, it's very small and not very pleasant at all, dark. But I didn't stay there too long because Chris Serafin was on the bench. Ted Coggs represented me. And I remember when I came out, he gave me a wink. He said, you won't have to be here long. But they did fingerprint me and do all that. So I knew how it felt. Martin Luther King told me the days that he spent in prison, you know, he had a long stay where he could write and really make an impact by staying in jail. I didn't have that privilege because actually arrest at that time was a badge of honor. Mm-hmm. You know, but it didn't feel much like a badge of honor. It was an unpleasant circumstance, and I hope not to ever have to go through that again.
Milwaukee is still known as a community where racism thrives.
You're quite right.
But I'm just curious from your perspective, if you, you know, take us back to the 60s and then flip ahead to where we are today, have you seen progress made since those days?
Oh, yes. Very definitely progress made. Well, my latest appointment as a member of the faculty, as a distinguished professor of law at Marquette University is symbolic of many things. When when I ran for the judgeship, which would have been in the 70s, I was a good lawyer. And I had done well. I had been a good judge. And I went in to talk to the dean about possibly being on the faculty at Marquette, even as an adjunct, just, you know, nothing like even a professor or anything. And he said no. And he told me quite honestly that they just didn't ever have anyone that was a Negro, and he didn't think it would work. And so I was turned down just basically on the basis of race. And our present dean of the law school, Howard Eisenberg, who is just a wonderful person, realize that that was the situation many years ago. Every time I got a turn down, I became deep down a little more determined to do something else. So I think every knock was really a boost, and I think that sums it up really.
Vel Phillips speaking with Dave Edwards on WUWM's At 10 in 2002. Phillips passed away this week at age 94. You can listen to the full interview and find more coverage of her life and work at WUWM.com.